Talk. Cape Talk, the US Report with Adrian Brune.
The US Report with Adrian Brune, all the way from the United States in Manhattan, New York. Thank you so much for joining us in conversation. Adrian Brune, a very good morning to you. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Ant. I am doing well. Just landed about an hour or so ago, so back in the States, and yeah, happy to be back.
Absolutely fantastic. Listen, let's talk about the United States, but you know, the president continues tweeting. What's the latest from your side?
Sure. So, quote, stop this rigged witch hunt now, unquote. That's President Trump on Twitter, where he took the extraordinary step of supposedly asking Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, to end the special counsel's investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election and the Russian links to his campaign. Now, some lawyers called the directive obstruction of justice, but Trump's lawyers said he was delivering an opinion, not an order. Trump also compared the treatment of the mobster Al Capone to the case of Paul Manafort, Mr. Trump's one-time campaign chairman, who is on trial as a result of the special counsel's investigation. And this happened while I was in the air. So President Trump, he seemed more open. He and Robert Mueller, the special investigator, are inching closer to an interview. So he seemed more open to cooperating with it. After all, against his own lawyer's advice, President Trump has indicated that he would sit for an interview, while Mueller has reportedly offered to ask fewer questions about obstruction of justice in the face-to-face meeting. Instead, Mueller's team, which is looking into, again, collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, will accept some responses in writing, supposedly. Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, said, quote, we're in the process of responding to their proposal, unquote.
Yeah. And let's talk about... It's been a very big issue, you know, and it's being debated all over social media. But let's talk about the 3D printed guns. I mean, we talk about the template. You mentioned that it's about, well, the Constitutional Court, I believe, says it's allowed to, it's allowing it to be published. But America seems to be divided on this one.
Yeah, as with regular guns, we're divided. We're definitely divided on the plastic guns. So a federal district judge in Seattle blocked the release of the plans for 3D printed guns just hours before they were to be posted online on Wednesday by the Texas-based Defense Distributed, which is helmed by an anarchist named Cody Wilson. Now, eight states and Washington, D.C. Band together to sue to halt the information, which would have made it easier for customers to make plastic guns without serial numbers using a 3D printer. Now, these weapons are invisible to metal detectors. They do circumvent background checks and are untraceable by law enforcement because they do not have serial numbers on them. Meanwhile, the Trump administration, which had permitted the release technically under federal law, which covers all United States, that's in the Constitution, the federal Constitution, they were, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of information, and these 3D printed plans do fall under that. But these states, under various state constitutions, each state, each of the 50 states, has its own mini constitution, band together, and they sued the federal government to block these bans, saying that they were dangerous to their citizens. Now, the Trump administration permitted the release under the federal constitution, but it also declared its support for a current law that prohibits plastic guns. Another court hearing is scheduled for 10th of August. I know it's a very complicated issue. I hope I got that through.
And let's dare ask the question, is Apple as important as it used to be as a brand?
It very much is. In fact, when I got off the plane, that I saw indeed that Apple had hit $1 trillion in value at the close of the stock market today. So I just saw it now. Apple shares did close at $207.39, making it the first public U.S. company worth more than $1 trillion. Now, its outlook wasn't always so sunny. In 1997, the company was on the brink of bankruptcy. Now it's vaulted to a level that prior giants GE, ExxonMobil, and AT&T could have never dreamed of. Now, Apple, I don't know if you remember this, Abs, but they came out in, I believe it was 99, with the candy-colored iMac, and that sort of turned things around. And then they came out with the MacBook Pro, or the MacBook, I'm sorry, in 2001. And then with the phones, it just completely took off from there. So I believe that, you could definitely say that Steve Jobs would be probably dancing around that Apple stage in his black turtleneck if he were alive today.
Yeah. Look, I don't know, but I do think that since his passing, though, the Apple brand is not the same as it used to be. It's just there's something missing there. I don't know. Maybe I'm just sour that I'm no longer Apple user.
Are you a Galaxy fan?
I used to be a Galaxy. I mean, I was a Nokia fan, and then I went to Samsung, and then I discovered Apple phones or iPhones, and then I enjoyed those until I started experiencing some problems. And then I started working with Huawei again, and I'm loving it. Absolutely enjoying the experience of a Huawei and Android. So I'm back with Android again. But look, I understand it's a culture thing. It's a culture thing. Either you're with Apple or you're with Android. It is what it is. Very quickly, before I let you go, Adrian, I mean, from your trip to, to the world or around the world, trying to see or trying to follow the world of tennis, what did you discover?
I was actually in Casablanca, Morocco, at the ITF Tennis Center. It's a training center for kids from North Africa and also from West Africa. They go around. There's a center director who goes to various tournaments in the various countries in Africa and spots talent. These are the next generation of either pros or American college tennis players. I saw and spoke with two boys from Côte d'Ivoire. They were very, very good apps. And a couple of girls, one from Cameroon and one from Ghana. They were also very good. There is another girl coming from Morocco who will be playing at the U.S. Open, so I'll be following her. This is the International Tennis Federation's effort to sort of distribute or make sure that, kind of like the Olympics, tennis is well represented. And I have a theory, Abs, and I believe that that Africa is going to be the next powerhouse in tennis. I mean, we saw it with football for sure, and now we're seeing it with tennis. These kids have some very great athletic talent. And there's a training center in Kenya as well, but Morocco was closer. It was a little bit less expensive. And the ITF director there was a little bit more friendly.
Oh, listen, that's absolutely great to hear. And we wait to hear or see who the star is going to be coming out of Africa. Nonetheless, Adrian Bruni, thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning. Looking forward to chatting again on Monday.
As always, Abs. Cheers. Have a great one.
Thank you so much. Adrian Bruni, all the way from Manhattan, New York.